What we do in life echoes in eternity.
You will once again be fighting for our freedom. Not from tyranny, oppression, or persecution, but from annihilation. We're fighting for our right to live.
This is a special presentation of Pro Life Today on WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pro Life Today. This is WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio. I'm your host, Joe Scheidler, and today I have a lot of guests. We're going to have a roundtable discussion on the closing of abortion clinics, and particularly the Albany Clinic in Chicago. We call it a clinic, some people say call it a mill, death camp, whatever, but whatever it is, it's closed. And my guests today are going to be my wife, Ann Scheidler, and Kathy Meeting, who is a fantastic cyber counselor, Bonnie Quirk from the Lake County Right to Life, and then we have also Tom O'Connor here, and John Jansen from my office. So welcome, everybody, to our discussion of closing down Albany. So, Ann, would you give us some background? You've been doing some study on when Albany started, when it opened, and and how it's been our target, in a sense, our prayer targets through the years.
We've prayed for this day to come for a long, long time. Albany actually opened as a birth control clinic in 1972. So prior to abortion being legal in Illinois and the vast majority of the nation, right after Roe v. Wade, they started doing abortion services, as they call them, and they were located in Albany Park on Irving Park Road, which is where the name the Albany comes from. They ended up moving to their Elston Avenue location, Elston near Cicero Avenue, in about 1977. And then they added increased space for their abortion procedures, so they were able to expand the number of abortions they were doing.
I never like to take credit for something that makes me seem famous or something, but we had a part in getting Albany closed the first time. There were a group of us that went down there on Irving Park Road, and we had a Father Corellis, Jim Corellis, a priest with us, Orthodox, who would bless the women as they were going in, try to talk them out of abortion. But we found out they were operating without a license. Their license had not come through, and I remember going in with a member of the licensing committee. I don't know just how I happened to meet him, but we went in and we closed the clinic down right during the day, and the women had to leave. And it was closed, and then it finally had to move. So I just want to throw that in because...
Yeah, this isn't the first time Albany is closed.
No.
And hopefully it is the last time. Hopefully it's truly done for. But in 1988, they affiliated with the Family Planning Associates, which was a network of clinics out in California. I don't think they had still been connected with the California group at this point. There was a separation a few years ago. Family Planning Associates in California actually runs 22 clinics up and down the coast of California. But here in Chicago, they had three. Now they're down to two. And it's the years and years and years of praying and counseling that good, faithful pro-lifers have put in front of that clinic that have made all the difference.
And Kathy, you have been out there for many years, and you've talked to dozens and dozens of, I wouldn't know how many.
I wouldn't know either.
But one thing I think we have to focus on is the number of babies that were killed at Albany Clinic. And what would you say that would be approximately over the years?
Joe, that's very
40-some years.
Tens of thousands.
Yeah, I think earlier we did some math on that, and we figured that it was at least probably 60,000, if not maybe even 100,000.
Probably more.
So we're talking tens of thousands of babies, maybe even into the hundreds of thousands of babies. So the number is just—it's staggering. It really is staggering.
I know, when you think these are all individual human beings and they have a right to live, but through our government's travesty, the Roe v. Wade, W. Bolton decisions. Abortion on demand.
But thankfully, we've got people like Kathy, who, when she was working full-time, took her day off Saturday, every Saturday, week after week, year after year, 21 years.
Going on 22.
Sidewalk counseling, reaching out to those women in.
But I also have to say there were other people out there with me, and they were very diligent, very faithful. we would just come together and we'd stay together, we'd pray together. And little by little, we started to have saves, and that made it everything that was worthwhile.
Don't you think Albany is kind of a mirror for God rewards faithfulness?
I think so, yes. Bonnie, and you've kind of adopted Albany.
We adopted Albany. I don't like to use the word adopt because we certainly don't love what was going on. We love the women who are going in, and we actually love the clinic workers. We try to open a different path for them. But many of the parishes in Lake County, it's through 40 Days for Life, adopted Albany Clinic, although some of us had been down there previously. But Albany Clinic was the closest abortion clinic for us because Lake County does not have an abortion clinic.
And good for you.
Pray to God that we never have one.
Someday we'll be able to say that about Cook County.
Yes.
It would be wonderful if we
wouldn't
didn't have
Cook great?
County. Yes, yes.
And Kathy, you've been at this so many years, counseling women and saved so many babies. I just think someday that you're going to be greeted by all these little babies you tried to save, and now you see the grown-ups. But tell us something about your method.
Well, when I originally went to Albany, we had come from Diversey and Western. And there again, where are we going to go?
It ended.
And primarily there it was protesting. So when the gang decided to go over there, we hadn't really had any really, really training. So we were kind of on our own. And I remember the first one, and God was with me. She was Japanese, had married an American, and was living here. And she was definitely going in to abort her baby. Stopped the car, she wound the window down, and she's kind of just looking like this. And the words that came out of me were basically, you don't want to do this. You do not want to destroy your baby. You're destroying your love, or something like that. And I said, please, please, give this baby 15 minutes. Come over, come with me, and let's go across the street, down the alley, and that's the Women's Center, and they have all sorts of help for you. So if you're thinking about finances she turned out she was a Presbyterian. So she had the Christianity behind her. And that one was simple. She said, okay. So I got in the car. I always get in the car if I can. I know some people go, what? But I never have felt that anything bad was going to happen to me. So I spent a lot of time in the back of the car. And we drove over. She talked to one of the women there. She saved her baby. And I thought, gee, this is easy.
Piece of cake.
I can get 30 babies in there, 20 or 30 babies in there. But then as time went on, you soon discovered 9 times out of 10, it's not
that is easy,
easy.
As that first one made it look.
Yeah, and especially if you're dealing with a late term, and because, you know, they're already set to go in. They've finalized everything. But as time went on, I think basically you do have a mindset that I can turn this girl. It's in your mind because you want to turn her so badly that you think you can. And you've prayed on it. The Holy Spirit is with you. And I think when you approach her, I'm a toucher. So if I would walk up and if she was accepting, put my arm around her. Of course, in the same time, we're going toward or away from her. We're going, the intent is to stop her so that you can talk to her as long as it takes. It might take 2 minutes or it might take 10, 15 minutes. But you've got to show them that you really care, that you're there for them, that you're feeling them, and that you're going to stick with them and take them to safe harbor. And everything is the same, but everything is different. Some of these girls, if they're coming in a car, they got a big rosary hanging there, so you can kind of go into the religion bed. Some of them have been deserted by the boy, and they're scared to death. And you want to kind of talk to her in a kind of a motherly way. You can always give this baby up for adoption. Because if you give them options, then you're not just saying, oh, you're going to be hooked with this baby for the rest of your life. And they're scared. I think 90% of them are scared.
Yeah, you can see that. You know, they're looking down, or they're
looking
in tears when they're
already
coming in.
Tears.
You know, they think this is what they've decided to do, but for many of them, they'd really like a way out. And
I think yes, you know,
to have
they're
a sidewalk counselor.
Absolutely,
there,
absolutely.
Yes. Is that
what you're saying reminds me of something that Frederica Matthews Greene wrote years ago. She was a hardcore pro-choice activist, became pro-life many years ago. She's married to a Greek Orthodox priest now. She wrote many years ago something to the effect of, I'm not getting the exact words, but something to the effect of that a woman doesn't want an abortion the way she wants an ice cream cone or a Porsche. She wants an abortion the way that an animal caught in a trap wants to gnaw off its own leg.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a misconception that a lot of people have about us as pro-lifers, that we have no idea what a pregnant woman is going through when she has an abortion. We're just completely clueless to the suffering she's going through, the real emotional heartache that she's going through. But we do. We know that. We know that because we really do walk with her. We empathize with her.
Mm-hmm.
And because so many people in the pro-life movement, women and men, have had abortions themselves or have been involved very closely with an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
They're post-abortive women or post-abortive fathers, and they know exactly where these women are going to. And that's why I think we know how to reach out to them, is because we know where they're coming from.
Yeah.
We know that they're not monsters. No woman
wants to be at an abortion clinic.
No,
never.
And you also have to remember that they have been lied to by the clinic.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the culture.
And the culture. But late term, it cannot be reversed. This is it. This is final. You must do this. And when you explain to them that indeed a late term can be reversed, has been reversed, then the tears start and they know that there's another way out. They want love, John.
Absolutely.
They want love.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's coming from a stranger on the street, they're looking for somebody to put their arm. They're looking for somebody to hug.
Well, and Kathy, that late-term abortion, I mean, this is one of the reasons that Albany was a particularly egregious place, because they were doing abortions. They advertised 23.3 weeks, but we know from talking to women going in that they were doing them 24, 25, sometimes 26 weeks.
Absolutely.
This is a very fully developed child who's going to feel pain.
Mm-hmm.
The mother may have already felt that baby kick.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2 to 3 day procedure. It's extremely traumatic for everyone involved.
Most people don't realize, even today, that abortion is legal up to and including the day of birth.
If you can find a doctor willing to kill the child, it's legal.
And I think the fact that these films have come out now of interviewing Planned Parenthood, buying body parts and so on, you understand these babies are well developed. Their organs are well developed. And the babies are alive, their hearts are beating, and they're murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And that's. But sidewalk counseling has become an institution, and you give these talks all around the country.
Well, and you see more and more sidewalk counseling ministries popping up all over the country because pro-life people feel that concern and care and love for these women that we know are looking for something, but not abortion.
And because of so many successes of saving babies' lives, what have the abortionists done? They have death squads. That's our word for them. Now, Tess, say something about the death squads. Who wants to chime in on this?
They're the worst.
Oh, they make it so hard.
We were getting, I would say, roughly 4, 5, 6 turns on a Saturday. They weren't all for abortion. Some of them were coming to get the pill or for different reasons. But it doesn't matter. You would get them off the street and over to the Winter Center because we had clear range. We would just go up and talk to the girl, and she'd say yes, and it's, you know, give us 15 minutes. You can always come back. We had the rosary thing going. I'd say the rosary closed that place. So we would have rosaries in our pockets, and we would hand out the rosaries. And 9 times out of 10, they'd take them even if they weren't Catholic. They would take the rosaries. When the death squads came, the saves plummeted.
Right.
Because you can. These are nice people. I mean, they, you know, gee, they will push you, they will shove you, they will try to say terrible things about you.
And they're well-trained to get in between you and the pregnant woman that needs to talk to you.
Right.
Like so four around you. It's hard to fight four of them around you.
Yeah.
And so they push on. They don't play fair. They go all the way across the street and down the block. They're not supposed to do that. And the police, they call the police forever, forever, forever. The escorts are just, our decline in saves has gone down because we can't get near them. Cannot get near them, right, Ann? You know.
And the escorts are preying on the fragile emotional state of that woman, too. They're taking advantage of the fact that she just wants to get this over with, whatever it is. And if we have a chance to talk to her and calm her down, let her take a little more time, then she can get past that crisis moment of needing to get into that clinic and possibly choose life. But with them on hand,
you just can't.
One of the other barriers, hindrances that the abortionists throw up is the bubble zone. And for many, many years, we had no bubble zones,
right.
but Albany got a bubble zone.
The city of Chicago, yeah. And that ordinance was passed at the behest of Planned Parenthood and the owners of the Albany Clinic to try to keep us away from talking to the women. So,
well, and in Chicago, I mean, the bubble zone that we have is more complicated. I mean, Anne, you're more versed on that. Can you kind of explain what a little bit more about what technically that is, what that entails?
The bubble zone is an amendment to an ordinance in the city of Chicago, so it doesn't apply to the whole state of Illinois. But in the city of Chicago, within a 50-foot radius of a clinic entrance, you can't approach a person closer than 8 feet without that person's permission. So it's a complicated situation because outside of the 50-feet line away from the clinic, you can talk to anybody about anything at any distance you like. As soon as you get within that 50 feet, then you've got this little 8-foot radius that surrounds any person that has business with the clinic, whether that's the patients who are coming in or the clinic workers or the escorts. But our interpretation of that law was because nobody else knows, and my patient won't know that there's this law, they won't know that we have to stay 8 feet away from them. So if you approach and they don't tell you to back away, that's a tacit approval that they're okay with you handing them a piece of literature or speaking with them. And then, of course, the escorts would right away say, there's a law, they're not allowed to come anywhere near you, you don't have to talk to them.
And then the police come by with a piece of chalk, and they're not sure what the ordinance is.
And the police could never figure out the ordinance. It's very complicated.
And you can't blame them, because it's so confusing. That's why you have one police officer saying this, then his sergeant saying this, his lieutenant saying this. I remember one time we were doing that protest outside of the thank God, now closed, abortion clinic on Armitage and Damon, the all-women's abortion clinic last year, and we were within the 50-foot radius, and the cop said, you can't be here, but there's a bubble zone. And we showed them the piece of paper and had it with it. We showed it, and then he took it back, and he came back and said, that is one complicated piece of text. He acknowledged that it was extremely complicated.
I remember one officer came to me sort of apologetically, and he said, you know, I'm a Catholic. My kids are in Catholic school. I agree with you, but I have to give a report of something. I said, okay, you gave your report. And as soon as they left, we went back talking to them because it is confusing. But the whole thing is a challenge. And Albany...
And, of course, the Albany had that canvas tarp all the way around. It has this chain-link fence surrounding it so that you can't get into the parking lot. The canvas covering the chain-link fence so that you can't see anyone you're trying to talk to in the parking lot.
And then there were little bitty gaps.
Yeah. There's a little bitty gaps between the two pieces of the canvas. And they taped it with duct tape because we would kind of push the little gap.
Push their fingers out.
Push it open between the gap to try to talk to somebody. Oh, no. So there's tape in between all of those little sections of the tarp to make sure that no pro-lifer gets...
There have been very interesting things happening. There's a real history to Albany. But there are lots of other clinics closing, too. And, John, I think you were just going through some of the clinics that have closed around the country. Would you like to do a little review of that?
Right, yeah. I think it's very encouraging. I mean, kind of the broader picture, taking a step back, if we look at I think it was the early 1990s, if I'm not mistaken. That's when the number of abortion clinics in the country peaked at around 2,000, I think it was. Yeah. Now we're down to somewhere between 600 and 700, depending on how you tabulate them. But just in the past 6 weeks, there have been six abortion clinics that have closed nationwide, at one a week for the past 6 weeks. One was in Ocala, Florida. One was in Manassas, Virginia. Planned Parenthood in Appleton, Wisconsin, right, as well, was another one. There's one more, I think, that escapes me right now. Albany. And then just this week, just very recently, we found out that Ulrich Klopfer, this longtime abortionist who lives in Illinois but actually did abortions in Indiana for many years, is finally going to be stopped from doing abortions. His last remaining holdout was in South Bend, right, and he had appealed the state's revocation of his license. He finally dropped that appeal, and so his last remaining abortion clinic in South Bend is going to have to close. So that's so encouraging to see. So this is Albany's not alone. Albany's one example of a whole bunch of abortion facilities nationwide that have been and are continuing to close.
We're learning methods. We've had books written on these sidewalk counseling, on the efforts that are being put into saving the babies.
Well, and certainly the 40 Days for Life campaigns all over the country at hundreds and hundreds of sites. Albany, I think this was the sixth year we've had a 40 mm-hmm. Days for Life campaign mm-hmm. out in front of Albany, and I believe it's the third year we've had the Divine Mercy image of it for that entire time. And in fact, the Divine Mercy image is staying across the street from the clinic for an indefinite amount of time. People continue to gather and pray there for all of the years and years of devastation and lives ruined that clinic represents.
And even with Albany closed, there are people still going out there, and some women will come by, boyfriends, they don't know it's closed. And you have
Kathy actually had a save after the clinic was shut down.
After it closed. Mm-hmm. No. Final save there.
Yeah.
Well, we have to take a short break here on Pro-Life Today. I'm Joe Scheidler. We'll be right back to continue our conversation on closing Albany Abortion Clinic. We're WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio, so stay tuned.
This is Ann Meyer, past president of the National Family Partnership. I am speaking today for WSFI. It's a wonderful station, and you can catch prayers and talks and information anytime. It's wonderful to hop in the car and be able to turn on that radio and get good Catholic information. So if any of you enjoy and appreciate this, please send your donation, and don't forget to pray for them. We need prayers for the success of this station because we know how important it is.
WSFI is committed to bringing quality Catholic programs to our local community, but we only can do that with your financial help. Please take a moment now to donate online at WSFIradio.org or mail your tax-deductible donation to WSFI Catholic Radio, P.O. Box 885, Libertyville, Illinois, 60048. That's P.O. Box 885, Libertyville, Illinois, 60048. Donations of any amount are greatly appreciated.
Are you retired or near retirement? Do you want to keep a larger amount of your assets in a safe place with guaranteed interest rates to protect yourself from a huge market swing? Are you amazed at how low the interest rates are at your bank? If you said yes to any or all of those questions, you may want to call me, Matt Tomlinson, at Catholic Financial Life to discuss our guaranteed fixed rate annuities. Call 847-548-MATT, 847-548-6288. Products not available in all states.
The Holy Family Catholic Bookstore is blessed with the opportunity to participate with WSFI Catholic Radio in the new evangelization. Holy Family is your local resource for books, CDs, and DVDs from Catholic Answers, Ignatius Press, and all of the other fine publishers featured on Catholic Radio. Holy Family also has the area's largest selection of baptism, communion, and confirmation gifts. Holy Family Catholic Bookstore is located at 9249 Old Green Bay Road, Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. More information is available on Facebook.
Listen at 7 o'clock p.m. every Tuesday to WSFI Spotlight, a half-hour conversation with outstanding Catholics from our community and around the world. WSFI Spotlight re-airs on Saturday at 3:30 p.m. or listen on demand anytime by subscribing to our podcast. Visit WSFIradio.org for more information. It's WSFI Spotlight, a conversation with Catholics living in the light. only on WSFI Catholic Radio, Tuesdays at 7 o'clock p.m.
Okay, you're listening to the voice of Joe Scheidler and a panel of very intelligent people. Today on WSFI, we're talking about the closing of abortion clinics, and in particular, the abortion clinic in Chicago known as Albany. John, what led to Albany's closing?
Sure. Well, there's a long story to it. So I think we have to back up a few years, going back to 2011. We all remember the notorious Kermit Gosnell in Philadelphia. Now, what does Kermit Gosnell have to do with Albany and Chicago? Well, this was, of course, a national story, that what this abortionist was murdering babies after they'd been born and then storing their feet in jars in his abortion clinic, just ghoulishness. All of the laws that he was, I mean, not only was he breaking moral laws, but he was breaking laws on the books as well. And it was this horrific situation. And in light of that, this was national news all around the country, all over the world, really. A woman who had been volunteering for us for many years, who'd been coming out to our Face the Truth tours, we show the pictures of abortion victims and sidewalk counseling as well, she had the thought, I wonder if we have any situations like that in Illinois. Do we have any Kermit Gosnell-like clinics in Illinois? So she decided, just doing her citizenly duty, to file Freedom of Information Act requests, which any citizen in the United States can do. You go to your state agency, whichever one you want to, that's authorized to look up information, and you say, okay, I would like information on when all of the abortion clinics in Illinois, when were they last inspected? So she went to the Illinois Department of Public Health, requested that information, and it took a while to get that information back, but once she got that information back, she found out that most abortion clinics in Illinois hadn't been inspected in years. It was like at least 10 or 12 years that had elapsed since the last inspection. And so she wondered, this is horrible. This is unbelievable. So she got in touch with her state representative, who was actually pro-abortion, oddly enough. But she knew him, and she had a relationship with him. She saw him every year at the county fair, I think. And so got in touch with him and said, okay, you know, representative, you and I don't agree about abortion. I'm not going to change your mind on that right now, but can you just at least give me an answer to this question? Why on earth is our state not inspecting abortion clinics on a regular basis? And the representative didn't know what to do with it. He then forwarded that on to IDPH and said, what do I tell my constituent? And IDPH came back and said that, well, we don't have the authorization to inspect abortion clinics, but because of what's been happening in Philadelphia and all this news about Kermit Gosnell, we're going to inspect all the abortion clinics within the next year. I think it ended up taking a little bit longer than that. But ultimately, in August of 2013, they finally inspected Albany, along with in the course of inspecting all of the state's abortion clinics. And that was the first time Albany had been inspected in 18 years. So, mind-blowing. 18 years, and the state found a whole host of violations. I mean, you know, not compliant with fire code, sanitary violations, a whole host of things. And the state said, okay, you have to fix these things. And Albany's response was basically to stall and to just say, okay, yeah, we'll get to that eventually. Now, normally what happens when you have these issues come up and the state says you have to fix this, you submit a plan of correction. Usually it's within 10 days you're required to do that. Well, Albany kept submitting plans of correction that weren't acceptable. State said, no, it's not the right way. You have to do it this way. And Albany's response was to then stall as much as they could and eventually submit a plan of correction. Again, it was unacceptable. This went on for literally months and months, over a year. They just kept submitting unacceptable plans of correction because they knew that it was going to cost too much money to make the necessary changes so they'd be compliant with the state's code. In the meantime, all this is going on, pro-life activists like Kathy here and other sidewalk counselors were seeing ambulances on a fairly regular basis, showing up at Albany, at the back door always, okay? And women being taken out, and we, of course, get pictures of them, and we would send them to the state. And of course, we'd show them to the women to say, this is not a safe place. And there was one instance, Joe, you remember this, back when we were doing our Christmas caroling outside of Albany last year, where we bring the joy of Christmas to the abortion clinic. You saw an ambulance right there that day.
Yes.
That was the third ambulance in 2 days that had shown up at Albany. We filed a complaint about that. And to the state's credit, they ultimately inspected it pretty much right away, just a few days later. What we found out was that particular day, I think it was probably that very ambulance, the abortionist actually left in the ambulance and there was no other doctor in the clinic.
That's right.
And left three other women. One had just gotten out of a late-term abortion like 2 minutes earlier. She was left there to recovery by herself with no physician present. That's a no-no. I mean, and the state fined them $10,000 for that. They ultimately fined them $40,000 additionally for other violations and then said, your license is revoked. ultimately, Albany then ultimately contested that revocation, and they got the fines reduced, but they ultimately paid, I think it was $32,000 to satisfy those fines. They ultimately got their license back. But they decided to shut down anyway. We figure it was because they just realized it wasn't economically viable for them to stay open.
The way we found out about it, we've got Tom O'Connor here, who was out at the abortion clinic. And tell us, Tom, what happened. This is divine providence.
This is like about, I think it was the 7th of October.
We were part of the watch, the Knights of Columbus, took that watch. Was that the 40 days, Brett Bonnie? Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
So that particular morning, I was not feeling well at all and wasn't particularly strong for various reasons. And so I wasn't going to go. And then I said, you know, I might as well go. So I ended up going over there, and I took Our Lady of Hope with me, a statue 17 inches in height given to me. There's a statue of 37 inches tall at Joan Ann's office, Our Lady of Hope.
And that's the pregnant Blessed Mother.
Blessed Mother. And so she's known as Our Lady of Hope. And she is manufactured, put together in Columbia, of all places. So I'm holding her. So I walked up to the entrance in the alley and with Our Lady, figuring we would see what was going to happen. I noticed right away there were very few cars. And I was surprised, but it didn't dawn on me why. So as a result, I'm standing there, and there was a few cars coming in and out over a period of a half an hour or so. And finally, I was thinking that this place is not as active, and I was trying to figure it out. And all of a sudden, a vehicle turns the corner in the alley to my right as I'm looking at the building. And it was a Jeep, and it was a flag hanging from the aerial with a skeleton on it. And I noticed that the window on my side was down. I was wondering what was inside of the vehicle. The vehicle pulls up alongside of me, and I look at inside, and this person clearly looked to me like I never wanted to meet him in an alley. And he had some chains and stuff on the seat, and he had a number of pieces of jewelry and it was above his neck and everything. And he says to me that, I screamed at me, "You have to be happy now. You have to be happy." I says, "Why?" And he says, "This place is closed. This place is shut down." I says, "Tell me about it." And he says, "This place is going to shut down on the 15th or the 17th of October." I said, "How do you know this?" And he says, "Because I used to work there, and my wife used to work there." I said, "Your wife worked there?" He says, I said, "Was she a nurse?" He says, "No, she worked there for 27 years. I said, "27 years? He said, "Yes. I hate those people." And then he mentioned the names of the manager and the people that owned it. And I'm realizing I've got a very angry person in front of me, and I wasn't quite sure how sane he was, but I just kept asking questions. And he kept saying, "You got to be happy. You guys have been out here praying all the time. You have to be happy. You have to be grateful." I said, "Well, you are." I said, "Listen." I said, "Can I put Our Mother on your front seat?" And he says, "Sure." He says, "I'm no devil." He was screaming at me the whole time. So I wanted to do that because I wanted to put Our Lady inside the vehicle for various reasons.
Exercise it.
Yeah, right. And I was reaching in my wallet for a business card for WSFI Catholic Radio because I wanted to give this card. I said, first of all, I said, "What is your name?" And he gave me his name, Wally. I said, "Hi, Wally." I shook hands with him. I said, "My name's Tom." And I said, "I'm with WSFI Catholic Radio." I said, "I want to give you this card, and I want you to give the card to your wife." I said, "We have people that would love to help your wife." I said, "What's she going to be doing for work?" And he says, "I don't know." I says, "Well, I said, where do you live?" And he says, "I live down over here." I said, "You don't live right over here?" He said, "No, I live two blocks away from here." And I said, "So," I says, "is your wife going to, do you need the money?" And he says, "Yes, we need the money." I said, "Well, we'll help her get a job. You give her the card." I says, "That's my name, that's my cell phone number, and that's my email address. Call me and we'll talk to her." I says, "We have some people that will help her get a job, and we will help her. Please, please do that. Will you do that, Wally?" He says, "Okay, I will give it to her." I says, "Wally, thank you so much." I says, "We're so grateful." So he says, I says, "15th or 17th? He says, "Yeah." I says, "Well, did you have a hand in this?" And he said, "Yes." He says, "Well, I hate those people so bad, he says, that I have a friend who works in government who said, I told him about what was going on there, and he told me that he would go in and look, and he promised. I got him some documents and some papers that showed whatever it was that he went in there for, and whatever he found was in violation. And that's when his story about what happened. And so therefore he helped shut it down, as well as his wife. So at that point, I thanked him, and once again, he says, you really, really have to be happy. He says, he's been out here all the time. Thanks, Wally. God bless you, Wally. And that was it.
And we are all happy whenever a clinic closes.
And we know that they're referring the women to their clinic that is downtown. So chances are
that
clinic is...
Tell us more about that, Anne.
Well, probably that clinic isn't going to be able to double what it was doing. It's probably... lives are being saved by the one on the north side being closed, and we have no idea how late they will do abortions at the downtown clinic. It's difficult to get information because that clinic falls in the category of clinics that are not licensed or regulated in any way in the state of Illinois, and the same is true of the Planned Parenthood abortion clinics too in the state of Illinois. So whereas we were able to get reports on what was going on at Albany, we won't get any reports on what is going on at Family Planning Associates.
I think our listening audience can't understand that.
Well, no one can understand that. It makes no sense.
I'm part of the listening audience right now. I don't understand it. So what can we do?
What
can we do now?
I think we try to put some pressure on our state legislators that they get some laws on the books that make these clinics accountable to the Illinois Department of Public Health, like any other health facility would have to be.
Absolutely.
Or a veterinary clinic would have to be. Right. Or.
And I think we keep on with radio programs like this and educating that the real war on women is going on inside that clinic.
That's right.
And it is not a real war on... We're here to help women, and we're here to educate that there is a different way, and we're here for them.
And how many women have you talked to, Bonnie probably, and Kathy, who said, oh, if only somebody had been there the day I went for an abortion.
Right. I'd like to make 2 points in closing, if I could, for myself. One is that I think we should go after the aldermen in the district that the clinic is in. Go to the alderman's office and find out whether or not we can find whether or not that alderman or woman can send city people over and inspect that clinic. See if there's laws within the city that they might be violating. And the last point I want to make is, Joe, your truth tour, where you're showing the photos of the babies that have been aborted and killed and maimed and all that, I know there's been some people that are not too fond of that, but I think the proof of the pudding is this, that I think I'm not alone when I say that the Holy Spirit has been guiding you in this movement forever, that was a very, very important part of what you did, because when we look and see what we're seeing now with the videos, guess what? You were showing that decades ago. You were showing that decades ago, and very few people bought in and said, oh, you know, you couldn't be doing it. You shouldn't be doing it. Joe, you were doing the right thing all along. And these videos that have come out now have confirmed, in my mind, that whole practice that you had was meant to be, and an awful lot of good were done that we won't know about in this world.
Well, Tom, the old Chinese proverb, picture is worth 10,000 words.
Yes.
People say 1,000, but the Chinese, I think, it's 10,000. The point is, the picture tells a story. And I was at a table one evening with a bunch of pro-life leaders, activists, and I said, how did you get involved? And every one of them had seen a picture. I got into the pro-life movement when somebody handed me Life and Death and the babies in the black plastic bag. One of the little babies, dead, looked like my son Eric. And it became very personal to me. And so we go out, and at this very clinic, Albany, there was a man that would come by, and I'd be out there with the picture of baby choice, and the man would say, every time I see you here with that picture, I'm going to write a check to the clinic. And he would write a check and give it to one of the desk escorts for the clinic. Well, he's not been around lately, but
it must have been enough to pay for the renovation.
It didn't pay the fines or the renovation, probably a dollar or two. But I want everybody in this, as closing the conference, our round table today, where do we go from here? John?
Well, I think one of the lessons we can take away from this, and this is harkening back to something Bonnie mentioned earlier. Bonnie said, God rewards faithfulness. Right. And I think that's important because we very much cannot break our arms patting ourselves on the back because we can't take credit for this. It's ultimately to the Lord, to God alone be the glory. But at the same time, though, this took a long time. It took a long, long time. This goes back to 1974 that it was first open. It's been a long time in coming. But yet we persisted. And it's not just we around this table, but dozens and hundreds really, of other pro-lifers who prayed or sidewalk counseled over the years, chipping away in this spiritual battle against this abortion clinic. It takes time. So often, because we're impatient, we're the kind of people that stand in front of a microwave and say, hurry, we want results tomorrow. God doesn't work that way. It takes time, and we have to be persistent. We have to keep going out there when the weather's bad and when the weather's very bad, you know, and keep praying, you know, even when it seems hopeless, when it seems like no one's listening, all the women we talk to, they're going to go in anyway and having their abortions. Our prayers seem to bear no fruit. That's when we have to depend on the Lord even more. And ultimately, God rewards faithfulness. I think that's a takeaway here. But I think
we
can take
it has very little to do with feeling. I've gone out to that clinic just doggedly. Ann and I would drive out, and we didn't either want to go, and the weather was bad. But you just do it. And that's when miracles happen. When you're doing something you don't really want to do, but you have to be faithful.
I think, too, we all know that abortion's a spiritual battle. But it's fought in the public square. And when people see faithfulness and they see people praying and they see it consistently and they're hearing love consistently, it changes minds. And I think that we engage in this spiritual battle because it's the right thing to do. And God rewards the faithfulness of those who follow through.
Right. I just want to mention one thing. We've seen the ambulances, but I've talked to doctors in the emergency rooms and where they bring the girls in. Some of these young women are brought in by taxi. Mm-hmm. The boyfriend brings them in bleeding. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to doctors who handle the botched abortion cases. And so we are definitely interested in helping the woman. And we don't want these laws just to save babies, but to save these women.
Absolutely.
And not just their souls, but their bodies too, mm-hmm. because these are dangerous places. And people have to realize that. When we close a clinic, we've closed something evil, something harmful, something that has nothing to do with what society is supposed to be about. So
one of sidewalk counselors went over to another business that's in the same building right next to Albany, a house cleaning business. They are so happy that the clinic is gone. One of the neighbors reported they're so happy that the clinic is gone. So
the police are probably happy too.
The police are probably very happy. Yes,
they will be
probably
coming out with their chalk.
Environment. You know, when you lift a dark, heavy evil out of a neighborhood, then light can come through.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I just wanted to say that I think the best people in the whole world are pro-life, the pro-life people. You're my best friends. I've met a lot of best friends in the pro-life movement. It is the greatest movement, and they are. They're saints.
I've always said it's the side blessing of being involved in the pro-life movement is no matter where you go, you meet the very, very best people.
Absolutely.
So kind, so giving, so generous.
Right. Wherever you are.
No matter where it is.
Ann and I were in London not too long ago. Our daughter's living there now. And I went to the Crisis Pregnancy Center there. And it was just like you're in Chicago.
Yes, it's your friends.
You are immediately. Five people, six people. Then we had benediction. Right. And then they invited me to give a talk. Yeah. So I spoke at Tyburn Convent, right where they used to be martyr, killed Thomas More, all these people. And so it's an international, worldwide
family.
It's family.
It's family.
Brothers and sisters.
It's family. Through thick and through thin.
You're Anybody got anything else to add before we close it?
You know what? One thing that I had to admit when the place actually closed, and of course Tom had told us about his experience meeting Wally approximately 10 days before the place actually closed down.
Right.
I took that with a huge grain of salt. I thought, oh, not likely. Wally is probably living in another world or something. And of course, we had prayed for this to happen forever. We had prayed for this to happen. And when it did, we weren't quite ready to believe it. You know, it's like, apparently my faith is a whole lot weaker than I would like to admit.
Yeah. Well, that's all the time we have for today. So I want to say thanks again to my guests, Tom and John and Ann and Bonnie and Kathy. I hope that our listening audience has learned something and been inspired. And we'll thank God for closing this abortion clinic. And then go right back out there to
another one
and start all over again. So until our next time, this is WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio. I'm Joe Scheidler. Thanks for listening.
For more information about this or any program on WSFI Catholic Radio, visit us online at WSFIradio.org.
This is Joe Scheidler in Chicago. Want to learn some Latin? Well, here are three simple words that say it all. Ora et labora. That's the motto of the Benedictines, and that means pray and work. Pray for the 4,000 babies who will be cruelly killed in legal abortions today in American cities alone. But also work to end abortion. Pray and work. How do you work? Well, come out to an abortion clinic near you. Pray there, but also talk to the women going in. Offer them help. If you want to know how, give us a call. We're the Pro-Life Action League in Chicago. Call us at 773-777-2900. That's 773-777-2900. Or contact us at prolifeaction.org.